Welcome back. I'm Paula. Elizabeth Strout is a wonderful writer. I sat down thinking, well, I read a lot of this heavy nonfiction stuff, but you absolutely captivated me in the ways that you brought the universality and the particularity, if I can say it that way. Yeah. You don't miss the opportunity to say, oh, look at what those terrible people in Washington have done to this country, and yet it's never didactic. It's never teachy-preachy. How does one find that kind of a, forgive my saying, voice?
Well, I'm interested, you know, I'm just so interested in people, in character, in the hidden self, and the way, in particularly, all of it's not quite so hidden, I guess, but I'm just so fascinated with how people manage to get through life. And personality and character and what I just love stories about people. So I just and
yeah,
then
but
it
you
comes
like
out.
Plants too. You're very fond of tulips.
I love the physical world. That's true. I love the physical world.
And over
very
and
much.
Over again, in many ways, without ever saying it, you put us back into nature, the nature of which we are a part. Is that intentional?
I think it's just an act of love on my part. I think that when I go to the page, I love those raspberries that are growing wild, and I love the bridal wreath that's growing wild about the window because I see it and it takes me back. I grew up in Maine. It takes me back to the smells of the pine needles. That's part of the world of these people. It's our world. So.
You live in New York.
I've lived in New York now for 25 years, but I grew up in Maine, and I came from one side of my family came from 10 generations, the other side came from 12 generations. That's a lot. If you do the math, that's a lot of generations of Maine. And so that's...
What is that, the beginning of the colonial period?
1603 or something, before, you know, like, I think white, you know, way back.
Way early.
Way back.
Yeah.
So
you're a real maniac.
Yeah. I had to say it.
I'm sorry.
Hardcore real thing. You know?
I remember, it's been decades now. I remember when early public broadcasting had a comedian, and the whole series was called Down East, I think. And it was my first understanding of regional humor. Mm-hmm. Maybe some teacher had said, well, there is this thing. The difference from one part of the country.
So different. And it's fascinating. And I feel a couple of things about that. One, I feel that I'm writing about a section of the world that's disappearing because the whole country's changing and it's time for it to change and all that kind of stuff. But there's this section of American history that I feel like I'm sort of recording right before it kind of gets evolves into the next stage. And also, flying around the country on the different book tours, I have to say it's been fascinating to see. This is a huge country, and it's so different in all its regions. And to go places that you wouldn't necessarily go as a tourist, it's just astonishing to me. It's just fascinating.
Don't you sometimes wonder, how could we possibly be one country?
I do. I wonder that a lot.
Or when will it break?
Yeah. Exactly, I do, especially more and more. I wonder that.
Well, in a way, you're following the tradition of Sarah Orne Jewett, because what she did, that's J-E-W-E-T-T, Sarah without an H, I'm not sure anybody reads her, and yet she had done exactly what you did in mm-hmm. another period, and mm-hmm. it's part of a whole series of stories.
Right.
So you're in a tradition not only of 16 generations back,
right.
but also a literary tradition.
I think so, yeah. Yeah, I think so.
We did a program in very recent past with Hermione Lee, who has given us the great gift of not only cleverly, beautifully giving us access to Virginia Woolf, but now really resurrecting in a serious way Edith Wharton.
Yes.
And I was thinking about Wharton and Jewett in more and Willa Cather, because she's done work with Willa Cather, who I've not read very much in a long time. None of this feels like it's being women's history. This all feels really natural.
Yeah, exactly. And Edith Wharton, she's amazing. She's just amazing. And I reread her and I think about her. And she has those two small novels Summer, which is somehow not as well known as it should be, I feel, and then of course Ethan Frome, and they, those two New England based small novels are just pearls, and of course her other work is wonderful as she reflects the New York
Society. She wrote 43 books.
Yeah.
Who knew?
Yeah, exactly. But she just got right down to it.
And she told the truth.
Way.
And
exactly.
It seems to me that that's one of those things that
exactly.
you do really consciously, as
yeah,
well as
I do.
Unconsciously.
I hope I do, because I that's what I want to be doing, because I just feel so strongly about this. I think that if you go and read a book that is cheap in its emotions or sentimental or somehow cutting corners, then you're doing a disservice to yourself and to your understanding of other people, and that we have to. I keep trying to hold on to the belief that we have to go to literature for the deepest, truest emotions. Otherwise, we do not know who we are, and we cannot understand what it's like to be another person. And we have to.
Well, if we don't know ourselves, how could we possibly know anybody else?
Absolutely. Absolutely. And the more false sentences we utter, or the more false sentences that are uttered to us, the further away we get from knowing what we really feel.
I am often taken when I see one of those pictures of the mass of humanity. Lunchtime on Madison Avenue or something, that is a picture frame just filled with bodies, or
that's
in
right.
Tokyo or in Singapore, when the whole frame is just these little bobbing heads and it's all people. It's very easy to forget that every one of those is a whole package of stories.
Exactly. Fascinating.
Overwhelming.
Yeah, it's pretty overwhelming. But it's pretty amazing.
I sometimes have sat in airplanes and have thought, Paula, don't think about it. There are 250 people on this plane. If you start thinking about every single person's stories, you'll go crazy. You have to get off this plane too.
Right. Well, you know, it's a double thing. It's like in some ways you can get kind of overwhelmed with a sense of, well, almost the futility of having a story, you know, your own story, because there are so many. I mean, there are millions, billions.
6 billion,
yes,
at the moment.
Exactly.
That's just at the moment.
That's right. That's just at the moment. And so, you know, and they get born and die every 2 seconds or less. And so you can sort of feel a little overwhelmed with, like, well, okay, what's the point of even trying to capture one? And yet at the same time, I guess for me, it is ultimately much more exciting than depressing, because it's just moving to me. It's just moving that everybody has their story.
Well, you also have wisely put them in constrained spaces so that they aren't overwhelmed. They may be overwhelmed by the Republican Party, but they're not overwhelmed enough that we don't do a lot of suicide in these books. We talk about
it.
But these people do.
They endure.
Endure, exactly.
They endure.
Faulkner taught us.
That's right. That's exactly right. And I remember my mother reading that section of Faulkner to me, that his speech where he's, you know, man will endure. And
that was his Nobel Prize
yes,
speech.
Yes, that's
and
right.
The echo is his character Darcy.
Yes.
Who, and Bell regularly says, the point is not to endure, it's to prevail. Well, let's just start with enduring.
Enduring is pretty big, I think. I think it's pretty moving.
Is it the small townness that helps you with that, or is that simply the venue that...
I think for the moment, for the last three book moments, the small town venue has been natural to me, because it is what I came from. It is what is somehow very familiar in some deep sense to me. What I'm working on at the moment, which I'm not going to go into too much, but it does start to include New York City, and I think it's just a matter of time before one can, you know, catch up to the different environments that one brings to the page. But the small town life has served me well, in the sense that it gives me a chance to focus on how we do respond to one another up close and in a need, you know.
But the internal conversations, the internal growth and development seem at least as interesting to you, and certainly to me as the reader, as the external. Almost as if we have a symphony going here, and you've got codas and double and back and little minuet over there.
right, because that's how I say, and I was quite young when I, you know, had that sort of moment of realizing, oh, all these people, you know, you can state their facts, you know, here's so-and-so, he's a professor, he's a doctor, he's a lawyer, he's a fisherman or whatever, but then inside, what do they think about in the middle of the night if they can't sleep? Do they sleep? If they don't sleep, why aren't they sleeping? And I just, from such a young age, found that so interesting that we walk around with these, you know, external facts that can sort of describe us, and then we have all this internal gobbledygook.
Or lie about us.
Exactly. And how do we maneuver some sense of equilibrium?
We're going to be back in a moment and explore that equilibrium a little further. It is a pleasure, in a way, to be with Olive Kitteridge, as well as her creator and the author, Elizabeth Strout. Be with us when we return in just a moment. I'm Paula Gordon. Ms. Strout and I invite you to be with us when we come back.